Blog Talk Radio.
We are not alone. And good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Contact. This is your host, Leslie Mitchell-Clark, and I am so pleased that you've decided to join us this evening, or if you happen to be listening to me by way of iTunes at some other time. We're awfully glad that you downloaded the show. And we're live tonight, by the way, folks, so we're hoping everybody's going to be calling in a little bit later on when we do open up the lines. And thank you again for tuning in. We have a absolutely phenomenal guest this evening, and I'm so excited to have the opportunity to chat with him. We're going to welcome to the show tonight Native American shaman, holistic healer, Reiki master, hypnotherapist, past life regressionist, and a number of other accolades, Mr. Drake Bear Stephen. And so he's going to be discussing a number of fascinating topics with us, his own personal journey as a shaman. I imagine he's going to be talking about how he came to his various healing modalities. As I mentioned, he's a certified hypnotherapist, a somatic healer, and he practices shamanic energy medicine, and of course, he is a teacher as well. And Mr. Drake Bear Stephen is located in the San Francisco East Bay, so I can't wait to talk to him about that beautiful part of the world where I lived for a while. And we're very much looking forward to chatting with him, not only about his own personal journey, but about his healing activities. We're going to talk a bit about shamanism and shamanic energy medicine. And certainly we're going to be talking about past life regression. And there you go. So we look forward to welcoming Mr. Drake Bear Stephen to the show. And I'm sure he's going to be calling in very shortly to chat with us. So there you go. That's our wonderful interview for this evening. And also in just a little bit, Wes Roberts is going to be joining me as co-host, as he oft times does, most usually. And of course, most of you know Wes as the producer of Contact, but he is also an experiencer, multiple abductee interfacer, and he's always got some fascinating things to recount. And speaking of recounting fascinating things, we do also wish to have a big shout out this evening to our friends from the Euphoria organization, particularly our fearless leader organizer, Mr. James Borg. We want to shout out to Charlie Kundalini and Skullman and Rick Clausen and of course, Lillian and all of our wonderful friends at the Euphoria organization, Carl Dory too, of course. And we thank them for their ongoing support and also in their openness in sharing their stories with me and with others. So thank you, Euphoria. The show really would not be possible without you, and we do appreciate your support. And while we're waiting for Mr. Drake Bear Stephen to call in, I'm just going to play a little word from our sponsor, Enchanted Reveries. Enchanted Reveries, metaphysical jewelry with a touch of magic to inspire the spirit. Earrings, bracelets, and necklaces, handcrafted from semi-precious gemstones, sterling silver, silver-plated pewter charms, and other symbolic and colorful ingredients. That is enchantedreveries.etsy.com. Enchanted Reveries. Metaphysical jewelry with a touch of magic. That's right. And they are one of our generous sponsors. And I've got to tell you, folks, I own a number of these beautiful pieces from Enchanted Reveries, and I'm going to get a lot more. So there we go. Anyway, I am looking at my little virtual switchboard here, and it looks like that might be our guest on the line calling in from the East Bay area. Let me just open up the line here. Hello, is this Drake?
Yes, it is. Hi, Leslie.
Well,
how are you?
I am great, and a very wonderful good evening to you, and I can guarantee that your weather is infinitely more pleasant than the deep freeze that we're in here on the Northeast.
Is it snowing by any chance?
It's snowing intermittently. I think it's probably almost too cold to snow right now, if you know what I mean.
Oh,
it's sort
wow.
of clear and really, really frigid. So there you go.
That's the time
anyway,
to get out those ice skates, huh?
That's right. Time to get out the ice skates and the salt on the road and all the rest of it. You know, you are in just a gorgeous part of the world, I'm sure, as you well know. And I've always felt that there was a very special energy about San Francisco, that it was, in fact, really maybe an energy center of the earth in some way. Do you feel that way about it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I lived in Los Angeles for a lot of years, and I also lived in Ohio. And I feel like I was directed here in 1997, so I know it's a very spiritual place. And quite often it's called, like, the cauldron, because there's so much spiritual activity going on here. There's a lot of different organizations and things that you
yeah.
can do to connect into the energy.
Yeah, a wide diversity of that. I did live right in San Francisco in the Marina for a while, and
nice.
It was a lovely time there, and also lived in Los Angeles. And I will just say, in the words of Dorothy Parker, there is no there. Just my
That's
opinion, cool. folks. But
and just
anyway,
as a point of perspective, I'm still losing leaves off my trees here. So, you know, it's kind of like we're on a time delay from the eastern part of this.
Yes,
country.
Yes, it is. Time is not really real, but I think it's fascinating that we're passing through different weather zones. But I think that this is also part of Native American helpful tradition, that the changing of the seasons is actually a very healthful thing for the body.
Well, it is, and truly in Native American literature and spirituality, it's the sacred hoop. Everything is a circle. So there's the circle of the four directions, the four seasons, the four elements, and that wheel just keeps on spinning around and around. In fact, circles is very important in Native American spirituality. And when the white people first came to the country, it was a shock to have them go into a square room, and they weren't even comfortable there because it wasn't round, and it was very hard to
yeah.
relate to that.
Oh, interesting. The whole energy and the whole sacred geometry of their lives was in that circular motif, and then here come the Western Europeans with their right angles and the rest of their BS.
Yeah, absolutely.
Boy, did I censor myself there. So tell me, Drake, a little bit about you practice an incredible amount of modalities that are just, you know, fascinating to me. We certainly share the fact that we are both hypnotherapists and work in past life and interlife regression, and you are, of course, very involved in healing, shamanic healing, Reiki practice. How did your journey begin into, you must have been a very special child growing up.
Well, I can definitely say I was different. I grew up as a two-spirit, and long before that term ever got coined, a two-spirit is actually a person that identifies as transgender or gay. And
mm-hmm.
I myself am transgender. I was born as a female, and I changed my physical gender when I was 33. And that, mm-hmm. after that, I went into this long period of being a hermit. It was just
yeah.
part of the whole process. And there were many years where I would just go into the mountains every weekend and just be with myself and with nature and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
about when I was 50, it was like walking through a spiritual portal for me. All of a sudden, I started finding out about shamanism and two spirits and how they're like medicine people, the tribes, and so I started going to different training and getting educated in it, and it was like coming home. It was like, oh, this is definitely something I resonate with.
Oh, yeah.
Most likely had many past lives in the same type of situation. And
no doubt.
Ever since, you know, I clicked into that, I've just been going with it. In the old days, it'd be like I'd get into something, I'd learn it, and I'd be done and bored with it. But to me, I've never been bored with, you know, energy medicine, shamanic healing, all that is just, to me, fascinating.
Oh, it absolutely is. And, you know, I think all of us are two-spirited to one degree or another. And certainly what we know about, you know, how the soul incarnates into, you know, male and female bodies, it's just an expression of degree, I think, you know, how two-spirited we are, which side maybe is more dominant than the other. But we all are carrying all of the multiple information of our many lives as men and women and two-spirited people.
Oh, I totally agree, and I know you do as a past life regressionist know that when we're on the other side, when we're in the spirit realm, there really is no gender, there's no male or female, and we manifest those lives on the earth so that we can learn the different polarities of it and come to a balance in our conscious minds.
Absolutely, and it is an essential, you know, part of the journey to work for that balance and necessary to have all kinds of experiences, as we know. I wonder about, you mentioned that in your past lives, I'm sure you had certainly many experiences in the Native American or Aboriginal cultures, you know, throughout the eons. But do you find that you resonate with the West Coast Native culture more profoundly, as in like the Chumash Indians, or maybe into the Americas, resonating with the Mayans and the Mayan culture?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, multiple cultures. I've been to Peru 3 times and deeply resonate with the indigenous people from the Andes. I've also traveled through the Maya and Aztec areas in Mexico and connected in deeply with like Tulum and some of the Maya sites.
Yeah.
But I also connect in very much to Plains Indians and the Northeast tribe as well. So I wouldn't say that I'm particularly connected more to one tribe than another or one region than another. It's just, in fact, even I know I've had lives as an Inuit because I just love the cold. I know it's cold there, but I love the cold and I love snow. And so I just resonate with that. And it just makes me feel like I'm alive. And so those resonations are very strong in many different cultures. And I enjoy that. I enjoy feeling like I come from a great, vast variety of backgrounds, cultures and different spiritual beliefs so that I can, you know, I think my soul's purpose is to bring all of that together and blend it all in one balanced type of experience.
Indeed. And when people come to you for shamanic healing, or I think actually this is what intrigues me a little bit more than that, even, because I have not, in fact, heard this terminology that I believe you call it somatic healing. Could you just explain to me a little bit about what that is?
Well, the somatic healing is a function of hypnotherapy, actually. It's done when the client's hypnotized, and it's for clients who have specific pains in the body. And you go and talk to the pain itself, you know, bypassing the client's conscious mind, talking to the pain, finding out if there's an exit point in the body, and if there is, you know, leading the client through having that pain exit the body through that specific point.
Excellent. So it's really, it's beyond what we do with hypnoanalgesia, so to speak. This is actually exorcising the pain in a way from the consciousness, because I'm sure this must happen to you all the time, where people come to you with mysterious pain that may in fact even be related to some damage to the etheric body from maybe a traumatic incident in a past life. And it really doesn't matter whether the pain is from something in this life or another life. The pain is real. And you, by talking directly to the subconscious mind, can identify that pain and identify the reasons behind it, I suppose.
Absolutely. And you just hit on one of my favorite topics, which is the energy body and how it overlays the physical body. It holds those imprints, as you said,
yes,
from past lives. It has memories of tragic injuries and deaths and emotions, and all of those imprints are there. And if they become a problem in this life, then they can be removed energetically through shamanic work, the excising of the crystallized energies. And so quite often, you know, we'll ask a client, you know, what type of pain is it? Where do you feel it? Does it move around? That kind of thing. And in the interview, you can kind of pin down an idea of what the cause of that is, and then go into the energetic work.
Indeed, and what a blessing it is to find. I'm convinced that I know that a lot of times people come to me with so-called fibromyalgia or IBS. That's a big one. There are a lot of things that are just sort of clinical diagnoses that seem to have become almost catch-alls. When the medical doctor doesn't know what's happening, when nothing is showing up on the MRI, and the pain persists, then out comes the pain medication and a diagnosis of, you know, Epstein-Barr or fibromyalgia or something of that nature.
Absolutely, and you know, it's very important to first rule out all those things from the Western medical viewpoint. But once you get to that point and you still haven't found the core cause, then it's time to take a look at the spiritual aspects of it, to look at the emotional aspects, because all of those do have a core cause, and they can be located, you know, through doing personal work.
Yeah, they absolutely can. And, you know, sometimes I feel so sad that sometimes people like us are the last people that individuals will seek out. They've already been, you know, tortured in every possible way, you know, before they come to us. And you know, I do think that people are highly suggestible, as you know, and sometimes when they're told they have a disease, you know, they will manifest it, whether or not it actually exists.
Right. So that's one of the reasons why it's so multi-layered. I mean, somebody could be holding on to something through fear. They could hold on to it because it gets them attention. Perhaps they like or enjoy being in that victim role. And there's so many different reasons why, but it's like peeling back the layers of the onion. You have to take you have to turn around and look at that fear. It's probably a fear, just a fear that's hiding there, and it manifests in a physical form. And really, the not knowing of it is far scarier than actually diving in and finding out what it is.
No kidding, isn't it? The knowing of it is so empowering, and I completely believe that much of what we're discussing tonight is fear-based thinking, and I could not agree more. Tell me, Drake, is the idea or the belief system of reincarnation something that is found in the Native American, Native Canadian afterlife theology?
Past life or reincarnation, it probably has many different terms depending on what the culture is, but most all the cultures of the world have a form of belief of it. mm-hmm. and it can change. The details of it can change, but the basic concepts are the same. I mean, it's been there since 2,000 to 3,000 years B.C. that we know of, where, you know, the Egyptians believed in the afterlife, and they went through these major preparations to prepare a soul to go on to the afterlife, to continue to live past their death time. And, mm-hmm. You know, I myself am not a Native American in this lifetime, and I don't want to, you know, speak out of turn for mm-hmm. that culture, but I'm just saying that all cultures, especially indigenous ones, have those spiritual beliefs. Everything in life and death is spiritually based and is the sacred hoop that I talked about earlier, the circle mm-hmm. of life that goes around and around, and it never stops. It's not square. It's a round
yeah.
circle, a wheel that keeps turning.
Indeed. Now, with regards to your shamanism, did you study with some particular individuals, or how did you receive this really esoteric training?
Yes, I've studied several different forms of shamanic work. One of them is the Andean tradition that I spoke of, coming from mm-hmm. the Caro tribes in Peru. There are some teachers in the United States that are carrying that lineage here. There's the prophecy from both Peru and from the Hopis that says when the condor of South America is joined with the eagle of North America, that will help raise the consciousness of the planet. And so a lot of the teachings are now coming down from the Caro,
yeah.
who were the Inca spiritual priests and shamanic people
mm-hmm.
from 500, 600 years ago. They've brought this knowledge forward. So I studied that, and I've also studied core shamanism, which a good place to do that, if anyone is interested, is to go to shamanism.org, and they have basic classes in core shamanism where you learn how to journey. And core shamanism is the shamanic work without the culture attached to it. So let's say you study the Andean culture, you're studying their culture as well as the work. But when you
yeah.
study core shamanism from Michael Harner, it's all of the shamanic practices without the culture, but all the things in common, which are journeying, working with spirits, and that
yeah.
sort of stuff.
And these shamanic practices, of course, you know, being an Irish-American person, I know that in the history of Ireland, I mean, the indigenous religion, I would certainly call it shamanic and transformational, and transformation and all of these types of motifs were all part of the Celtic mystery schools, if you will. So this is a global, really a global way of viewing the world in all of its spiritual glory and ramification, and kind of the idea that we, you know, we create reality in a way, I think.
That's absolutely it. And once you become empowered by the knowledge that you're creating your world, everything changes. I mean, you
yeah.
are in total control of everything that happens to you. You know everything happens for a specific reason, and that it's a lesson, and that gives you the power to manifest the things that you really do want in your life.
Indeed, and then that is also the end of victimhood, right? Because
absolutely.
Once, yeah, that's it. It's over. I mean, once you are empowered, once you realize that you picked your parents, you selected, you know, at least in the broad strokes, you know, your life's journey. So there is no one, there is no blame. You made choices for your own, you know, education, your soul's journey with, you know, as I believe, the input of divine beings or highly evolved beings, and whatever terminology you wish to use. So victimhood is out the window once spiritual awareness begins to occur. And boy, I can really see you in Peru, in the Andean culture. you really resonate there.
I do. It's always so hard to come home when I have to come back.
I can even see you in other forms, you know, not knowing you in person, but I'm having a strong vision of how you looked in a particular life right now. So, are you talking
about off-planet life then?
Well, it looks like this planet. It looks like the Andes.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
It looks like, but I'm sure you probably have had off-planet lives as well, and that probably wouldn't be excluded in the theology of Native Americans.
Oh, absolutely not. Native Americans all believe that they are from the stars. Their ancestors are from the stars, and they're sky people, and many indigenous cultures around the world have that in common, that they have the descending gods. When you go down to look at the Maya structures in Mexico, you'll see the descending gods carved all over the place. And this could be, you know, the star people that came to this planet. And,
indeed.
You know, thousands of years ago. But definitely that's an indigenous belief.
Well, there is a, you know, in the work of Zechariah Sitchin, who, of course, was the great scholar of ancient languages, who translated, you know, these early ancient and the extreme Sumerian cylinder seals, and came up with a lot of fascinating information and a totally alternative theory to our origins, if you will. The information in the cylinder seals states that at one point there was a battle between two brothers, kind of a Cain and Abel-like thing, except that they were of the hierarchy, and there is no death penalty among the Anunnaki culture, which is who he was talking about. But the punishment to the brother that caused the real damage, he was sent into exile. And where he was sent, according to the Sumerian cylinder scrolls, was into North America. And so where he then allegedly brought all of the knowledge and culture that the Anunnaki were already utilizing with the Sumerian peoples in the Middle East. And further to that story, because this brother who was sent to North America had, you know, committed such a heinous crime, his DNA was adjusted so that he would not grow a beard, because beards were very, very important part of the Anunnaki look if you were a man. So it was very humiliating for him. And hence the theory then translates that the Native American peoples and Native Canadian peoples, who would all be descendants of this one evolved being, have great difficulty growing facial hair.
Oh, wow.
So that's the cool story. But you've got everything in there. You know, the thing is, you know, the Bible is a, it's a real patchwork of, and forgive me, I was raised Catholic. I don't mean to offend anyone of any belief system, but the Bible that we utilize today, the King James Bible, is a patchwork of mistranslations and, revisionist history and selection of the popular, politically popular points of view. There were many, many books that have been excluded in fact, have a lot more detail to some of these big stories, like the Noah story, which in fact goes back to Zarathustra in ancient Sumeria. But anyway, so I have a little call on the line here. I think I'll pick that up and see if someone has a question for you. Just one sec. See if they're still here. Did I wait too long? Good evening. You're live on Contact.
Hey, it's Wes Roberts calling.
Hey, West, thank you for calling in. We're having a great time here with Drake, as you can hear. Drake, this is our the producer of our show, Wes Roberts, phoning in.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Drake. I'm great.
Great.
And,
did you have
I've
a... Go right ahead, Wes.
Yeah, sorry about that. This happens every show, Drake. You'll just have to get used to it. I've been listening into the entire conversation. I had a couple of comments, and then wanted to ask Drake something about some of the social media he uses, if that's okay.
Sure.
All righty. First comment is not quite exactly the same as Leslie's, but of all the American cities I've visited, San Francisco is my number one. In fact, I think I've been there 9 times. And for a Torontonian, you know, going back and forth, that stretched out over 2 or 3 decades. But I love it, and I'm headed back actually next fall again. So I think that's my 10th time. It's my favorite of all American cities. There's an energy about it.
America's Paris, that's what we call it.
Oh, it's fantastic. I just love the vibe. So I've been listening in, and I wanted to ask you, Drake, a couple of things. One is social media related, because I notice you have a presence just about, everywhere, as far as I can tell. You know, everywhere from Facebook to LinkedIn to Pinterest. So I'm kind of interested. It's one of my little interests. It's one of the things I pursue. Google Plus, in terms of grouping your friends together and associates together, also has something called Circles. And I'm not sure if you make use of that or if you were aware of that.
You know, I haven't gotten into Google Plus, and I actually have some emails in my in-basket right now of friends trying to connect with me. And I keep saying, oh, I've got to get to that next. And it's just time. It's a time thing.
Oh,
it's
no,
my
no,
intent
totally,
to do it, though.
I totally get the time thing. In fact, I was just at an intensive 2-day boot camp this weekend on social media, because it is one of my great interests. But I mentioned Google Plus only because that's the lingo they're using. You've been speaking about circles already this evening.
Yeah.
And so Google Plus, instead of using groups, it uses term
Good
called
point.
Circles.
Yeah.
And
I would imagine.
Are you familiar
ahead,
with the book Platform by Michael Hyatt? It talks a bit about social media, but it's really on how to market yourself. So if it's like product, or you're publicizing a book, or whatever it is that you're doing, this tells you how to build a platform, build a following of people, and this is how you do modern marketing. Since 5 years ago, everything's changed because of social media. And it's a really fascinating book. So I found out through Hay House, and they make all of their authors read this book. And you might really enjoy it and pick up some ideas to enhance your love of the social media.
Well, thank you
Indeed.
For that recommendation. Yeah, I've got my ear to the ground on every tip I can follow up, and it's so massive that you need to come up with a strategy, and I'm sure that's one of your comments about, you know, when you get around to it, mine is too. It's like I can't have a presence in all of the channels that are out there. It's not possible.
Oh, yeah. There's just so much happening on so many different channels. And sometimes I'll get incoming messages and forget what the source was. And so I'm like hunting around. Well, was that an email? Was that Facebook? Was it this? Was it that?
Oh, yeah.
So if
it
I don't answer
so
somebody
simple.
Within a day or two, it's just because I got to find the right channel.
And just think, only a few short years ago, it was like a big deal when I was allowed to have an extension phone in my bedroom.
Yeah.
I was a teenager. Oh, my God. I thought it was the Christ when I
Well,
oh,
you know,
my goodness.
I didn't just want to talk about social media, too, because you mentioned something that really resonates with me, and I know it does with Leslie as well. And I'm not sure I'm quoting exactly, but I think you said you make your own life. And one of the things that went through my mind is something I'm very interested in these days, and I'm a newbie to it, believe me, is the whole law of attraction area.
Oh, yes. That's that has definitely grabbed a lot of people's attention, and I have my own theories about it. In fact, you know, I teach a class called Medicine Wheel Mystery School, and it's a series of like 13 days spread across a year. But the very first thing that I do in my class is I hand out a mirror, and I say, this is how the world relates to you. Whatever you see in that mirror is what you get back. So if you think you don't deserve something, that's what you're going to get. But if you believe in yourself, you believe in who you are, you love who yourself, you know yourself, then your vibration raises up, and you start attracting in those things that you want.
That's strong medicine, I would say.
It is.
Yeah,
it's hard.
I would say you're
it's hard.
Probably.
But it's good. It's really powerful when you turn that corner and you really see how everything's based on how you vibrate with the world. And how you vibrate also affects the world because of the things that we know about quantum physics. How you feel emotionally affects the whole awakening and vibration of the planet. So the better you feel, the better the planet's going to be.
That's absolutely true. This interdependence is something that the Native peoples have long been aware of, the relationship with Gaia, Mother Earth, the symbiotic nature of all life, spiritual and otherwise. These are concepts that the Native peoples have just embodied, and now finally I think the Western more cerebral, well, not maybe cerebral, more frantic cultures are beginning to open up, most certainly. And I was wondering a little bit, Drake, have you ever been asked as a shaman to perform any sort of exorcism rite or cleansing where you had to go in and remove either souls that didn't know they had passed, or perhaps, I'm not sure if you have a belief system that includes that there would be beings that were elementals.
Oh, absolutely. I believe in many different dimensions existing, and spirits crossing over somehow by accident or on purpose. But extraction work, we call it extraction work, extracting entities, is a huge part of shamanic practice. Going in, working with the spirits. And I would say that probably, I mean, this might freak out the audience a bit, but I would say probably at least 80% of the people are carrying some type of entity with them if they've not had an extraction.
Mm-hmm.
They're very,
mm-hmm.
very easy to pick up. And again, we're going back to the vibration. You're going to pick up an entity that's vibrating at the level that you're at. And so if you hang out in specific areas, it's very easy to take on an entity. And it's also very easy to create a symbiotic relationship with them. They're not all these, like, scary, malevolent type spirits, but you create a partner in life, if you will, something that's there with you all the time, and you become very comfortable in that relationship. But it's also an energy that you really don't want on board. You really want to clear your energetic body so that it's just you and everything that comes from you is purely you.
Indeed. And I would have to agree with you, Drake. I mean, we do, the terminology is slightly different, but in the hypnotherapy work that I do, I have been taught energy release, we call it sometimes. But it definitely pertains to, if not an entire personality, maybe fragments of negative personalities or entities that have attached. And as you say, the person is not necessarily aware of it, because there are many different levels to attachment, from attachment all the way to possession and oppression in between. So many, many people walk around, as you say, having attracted or welcomed or just picked up something.
Yeah, and that's a big basis of energy medicine, is because you learn through energy medicine the tools of how to keep yourself clear, how to keep the aura clear, how to make the chakras be healthy and clear and open, and you know, keeping yourself disconnected from cords, people cording into you. But also another piece part of shamanic work is soul retrieval work. And so there's two aspects of soul retrieval. Sometimes people, when they're in traumatic situations, will put away pieces of their soul for safekeeping so they're not integrated with their entire soul. And a shamanic practitioner can bring back those pieces. But sometimes we're in relationship with people who take those little pieces of the soul and try to keep them. So a shamanic practitioner can go in and bargain with them, get those pieces back and bring them back. But also individuals themselves will take pieces of other souls and keep them with them for various reasons. And so working with a practitioner, you can also learn to give up those pieces of the soul because they're not yours and they don't belong to you. So there's a lot of energetic things happening on the fragments and soul pieces and entity levels in the energetic world.
Yes, and I would have never imagined it to be so prevalent. But the good news is that all it takes is the awareness. Well, even seeing someone who can, you know, identify it, because you know, I've seen issues like depression, crippling depression, anxiety, mood swings, various illnesses just evaporate and disappear following an energy release or entity release, if you prefer.
Yeah, and the sad part is that somebody may have had an entity for so long they don't even realize what their natural state is. They don't even realize, oh, I'm not feeling myself. I'm feeling drained. I'm feeling tired, you know, depressed. And I have these feelings, but they've been there so long, you feel like this is normal for me.
Yeah, of course. People learn to tolerate it. I know that, you know, more than once, a few times, you know, I've been treating women of various ages, you know, and they were carrying around they had all gone through the process of abortion, legal abortion or clinical abortion, in some time in their past, and the sadness and the grief had been really repressed and never really left. And in fact, there was a fragment of maybe the child's soul that hadn't left. There was definitely a blockage and occlusion and dark blob, you know, that I have seen a number of times in a situation where someone has had an abortion. And I'm not expressing any political agenda here. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that in the situation of women that I have treated, their own psyche, their own vulnerability, whatever it was, allowed a chunk of that being to continue to be attached.
Well, absolutely, and I think that it's important to put out there that anyone who has had a miscarriage or an abortion, it was all divinely created. It was all there for a lesson and has no guilt attached to it at all.
Yes.
But these beings,
yes,
these baby beings that didn't come in, they were part of the contract. They're in agreement with what happened, but quite often they do stay around the mother. And I've heard that they will come in to the family later on, perhaps in another child's body or in a relative's body. So, you're right. These souls are hanging around, but there's definitely a lot of energetic work that can be done to heal that relationship.
Indeed. Can you tell us just a little bit about a firsthand shamanic experience of yours? I don't care how far out it is. Could be some type of a dream quest or some type of traveling, spirit traveling that you did. I'm just fascinated to hear about you know, one of your experiences.
So you mean a personal shamanic experience?
Like Yes, like a personal trip, if you will. If that's possible.
I'm trying to think of what would be a good story. Because, you know, I'll just put out there that it is, it's a shamanic practitioner's way, if you will, to visit the spirits, to work with the spirits all the time. So that's one of the differences between being a medium or a reader versus being a shamanic practitioner is the shamanic practitioner actually goes out into the spirit world to contact spirits to find solutions and bring them back, whereas a medium is allowing those spirits to work through them, or their voice comes through the body of the medium. So there's kind of a slight difference. So a lot of the things that I do are personal journeys. So I use a drum, or I listen to drumming, which is called the horse that you ride in. It's actually riding it into the trance state. You know, as a hypnotherapist, right?
Yes,
that
yes.
A journey is really going into a deep trance state, so the theta level.
Yes.
And quite often, so my standard way of doing it is I will have a specific question that I want to ask. I'll put the intention there, and then I'll listen to the drumming, and I'll just take you on a kind of a personal travel. Is I go to the, there's two worlds besides the middle world that we live in the shamanic realm. That's the upper world and the lower world.
Uh-huh.
It's quite, most often I'll travel to the lower world, and that's where I meet my power animal. And the opening to going to the lower world is through a tree root. So I go to the specific tree in the sequoias that has like a burned out portion at the bottom of it. I sit there, and then I travel down the root until I pop out into the lower world. And that's where I'm met by my power animal. And then I tell my animal, okay, you know, I've come to ask this specific question. Can you go with me to whoever will provide the answer? Quite often I'll end up at the Council of Elders.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yes. And so then I'll, you know, talk to the elders. There's usually a fire in the middle, and it's very much like Plains Native American type topography. Occasionally, we will travel to the upper world, and in that case, I go up through the tree, the same tree. I go up through to the very top where the leaves are, and then pop out into the upper world. So you go to the upper world to meet specific spiritual guides, but most of the traveling we do is in the lower world.
Mm.
So you go and you find out your information, you get all the wisdom. If you're out there to get soul pieces or whatever it the work is that you're doing, you do that. And then there's a call back on the drum, which is a change in the beat, and then you know it's time to, you know, go back to your tree root and travel back up through to this world, which is the middle world.
Wow, fascinating! So you're going into the theta state. You're altering your perception, and you're going into a deep trance. At which point, you're basically your etheric body is basically free to travel as you wish.
Yes, I guess, and something that would be very closely related, it would be like astral traveling. Because you're out going through the universe, you know, moving around. And I'll tell you another, since you asked this, there's another experience that we work with in one of the directions in association with psychopomp work. Psychopomp, if you don't know, is helping people move from life to death, so crossing over, crossing the veil.
Yes.
And so In order to have shamanic practitioners understand what that experience is like, we unscrew all the chakras and allow the energy body to come up out of the physical body and travel around, just astral travel around, and then come back into the body, and then we screw the chakras back in. So that gives a person an experience, consciously experience, what it's like to be out of body.
Oh, wow. So that alleviates any kind of fear or reticence about what they're about to experience.
Well, right. I mean, some people are apprehensive, and usually until you get out of the body. And once you feel that difference, which is also kind of the state you're in the theta state when you go to the between lives,
mm-hmm.
it's almost that same feeling of you're just floating, you're not physical, it's very ethereal,
yeah.
floating around, just going, kind of thinking, I want to be there, and you just go there. It's that kind
yeah.
of traveling around. And then once you're out of the body, you're like, oh, I really don't want to go back.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, and it's like superluminal travel. I mean, it's instantaneous. You think, and there you are. And I think the last time that I took an interlife journey, it was probably Georgina who was guiding me through, you know, your friend Georgina. And and one of the astounding things that I believe I saw was I said it's like a hospital, but there's no sadness of any sort. And in fact, people were recuperating, and they were being treated with light or perhaps crystals. Things were being waved over them by you know, light beings. And so it's kind of, I guess, what I wanted to see, because I have always felt that when people pass from a long weakening illness or maybe in a trauma, that there must be some kind of transition, some kind of cocooning, some type of healing of the etheric body on the other side. Have you ever seen anything like that in your travels?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I totally believe that there's like the hall of rejuvenation or whatever you want to call it, this place for healing, especially if you experience a traumatic lifetime or a traumatic death. That might be the very first stage of where you go as soon as you pass over. But I have also read an incredible number of books on, you know, the crossing over and the afterlife and what happens. And they're all based on clients who have experienced this through hypnosis. But mm-hmm. the bottom line is that whatever we expect in the other world is what we're going to get. So it's kind of just like the same principle of looking in that mirror, and whatever we put out to the universe as we get back, it's the same on the other side. So if you believe in heaven and hell, that's what you're going to find. But if you believe in the rejuvenation and the healing and I believe in the schools of wisdom that I can attend mm-hmm. when I pass over and mm-hmm. rejoin with my soul group, and I have all these like really positive ideas of what it's like, then hopefully that's what I'm going to see, and that hopefully
all these books
are right.
Yes, they are. They are, and I think even if someone is a good person and they are, you know, really boxed into a specific religious belief system, I think that light beings or angels or guides will present themselves as, say, you know, the Mother Mary, or possibly as Muhammad, or as Jesus or Buddha, or Zoroaster, or whatever. If the person's belief system needs to see those entities to be comforted to come across, I think that entities will